They moved in a column of twos through the darkness, Gideon and Jimbo as outriders a short distance from one flank, two other troopers performing the same function on the opposite side. No sign of daylight showed in the east when they broke camp, and little more sign when they struck the creek some distance from the Indians. Hollander waited there for the sun to rise. Gideon watched him narrowly but silently, wondering why he couldn't have let the men sleep longer rather than have them sitting here on their horses, nervous and unstrung. He remembered times on the plantation when old Colonel had booted every slave out of bed long before daylight, then had them waiting in the fields an hour or two for the morning sun to dry the dew so they could pick cotton. It seemed an hour before the first color betrayed approaching daybreak, and another hour before enough light had spread that the men could see 100 yards. At length, Hollander and Maloney glanced at each other and shook their heads at the same time. Hollander motioned for the men to gather around him.
Surprise is the main thing. They have some horses tied in camp, so it won't help much to run off the horse herd first. We have to hit them so fast and hard that none of the warriors in camp ever have a chance to get mounted. They'll swarm out of the teepees like so many hornets, I think. It is not my intention to leave one of them alive.
There's women and children there.
We are not here to kill those. But we are not here to be killed either. When in doubt, shoot.
He studied Gideon a moment, then looked at some of the others.
It is not army policy to brutalize these people, but it is army policy to see that every transgression is punished. If you feel any weakening of your resolve, remember that woman you saw murdered on the Colorado.
Them reservation Quakers are raised hell.
They are there. We are here. When they are here, they may do as they see fit. Finley, come up here.
The little trooper obeyed reluctantly. Hollander eyed him fiercely.
I saw you hanging back in that other engagement. In this one, I want to see you in front of me at all times.
Hollander touched spurs lightly to his horse and led out, the men following him along the creek. As the edge of the sun's red ball pushed over the low hill to the east, he drew rein within sight of the first teepee on the creek. No alarm had been sounded. The lieutenant shivered, first sun pushing the cold down upon him. But he flattened a coat collar he had turned up earlier against the sharp wind. He drew his pistol and looked around him to be certain everybody was ready.
Bugler!
Most of the men had pistols in their hands, but Gideon was one of those who preferred his carbine. He had never come to trust a pistol. It seemed like a live thing in his hand with a will of its own.
Charge!
At the first notes, the soldiers and their horses rushed toward the camp. The lieutenant had fired toward the upper part of the teepee. It struck just below the point where the lodge poles were joined and tied and where the smoke vent indicated a morning fire already going. A man stepped through the opening. He was hit by the morning sun and two carbine slugs. In less than a minute, the vanguard had reached the far end of the small camp. Gideon's carbine smoked from shots he had fired at Indian men who had leaped from the high teepees to face the invaders. He didn't believe he had hit one. He whirled Judas around and looked back for the lieutenant. Through the gray swirl of gun smoke and dust, he saw him. Hollander's eyes and mouth were wide as he spurred into another run. Maloney's yell had chilled many a Yankee soldier. He plunged after the lieutenant.
Now we got him! Come on, boys! Woo-hoo!
Gideon rode neck and neck with Jimbo, who seemed drunker on excitement than he had ever been on whiskey. By the end of the second run, the camp's defense was finished. A number of women and children had made their way to the creek or across it. Gideon's observation had been hampered by the speed and stress of the action, but he doubted that a single adult male had survived. At the upper end of the camp, where the first rush had begun and the second had ended, Hollander pulled up and tried to survey the devastation. His gaze fell on Sergeant Waters. He made a sweeping motion with his arm.
Take the handiest 6 men. Cross the creek and bring back those women and children.
A few had fled up the hill to the rear of the camp. He sent 3 more men to encircle these and haze them down. The remaining men gathered around the lieutenant on horseback.
Now, we'll take this camp 1 lodge at a time and make sure we've cleaned it out.
He spied the unfortunate little Finley, who had hung back despite orders.
Finley, you make sure nobody is still in that first teepee.
Finley seemed tongue-tied and frozen.
Finley!
He brought up his pistol. Cowed to the point that tears began to run down his dusty cheeks, the little man hunched his shoulders, hesitated at the flap, then stepped inside, pistol in his shaking hand. Nothing happened. He came out near collapse. Big Dempsey watched the lieutenant in resentment. He disliked Finley, but he hated Hollander.
Proceed, Finley!
I'll take the next one, Lieutenant.
Dempsey's search produced the same negative results. A snarling dog challenged him as he stepped out. Dempsey ended the challenge. All up and down the camp and well to either side, other dogs were in a frenzy of barking. Gideon judged that most would starve now, for they were too dependent to thrive in the wild. They were not wolves. The women and children, too, would starve if they were left here. He watched them herded back across the creek and down the hill, weeping in fright and grief. A chill that shook him came less from the bite of early morning frost than from the desolation he saw in these people. Somehow, he had never considered Indians in terms of women and children. He had thought only of warriors, free and wild as the winds that searched these rolling plains and the broken hills of the Caprock country. Certainly he had known there must be women and children somewhere, but these had been only phantom wraiths, not quite flesh and blood. Now he looked at the terror in their eyes, and they were very real, very vulnerable. One by one, the teepees were searched. Gideon stared in wonder at the first one he entered, for it seemed larger inside than outside. The bedding and horseback accoutrements and cooking vessels arranged with considerable order, a fire crackling in the round fire hole at the center. A dozen strange odors assailed his nostrils. A trooper named Jolly walked to the open flap of the next teepee. Jolly stumbled back with an arrow in his shoulder. Two troopers rushed past him. One stepped inside swiftly. Gun smoke preceded him out the open flap. Gideon watched two friends pull the arrow from the wounded trooper Jolly and try to stop the blood. His attention was diverted by a woman's wailing. The one who had run to the first warrior felled in the rush was now keening a song tuneless and alien to Gideon's ear. He shivered. He sensed it was religious, probably a death or grief song. From somewhere she produced a knife, and he instinctively brought up his carbine. But she used the knife only against herself, first hacking off handfuls of her black hair, then slashing her brightly beaded deerskin dress. It fell away from her shoulders, baring her arms and her body to the waist. He watched in cold disbelief as she gashed her left arm from wrist to shoulder, then switched hands and did the same to the right arm. She made a slash just below her throat, sending blood streaming down her breasts. Gideon watched, transfixed, unable to move. The woman's eyes burned with a determination he had never seen. Lieutenant Hollander pulled his horse around in consternation.
My God, why didn't you stop her? She'll bleed to death.
Gideon had no answer. He had seen grief among his own people, at death, at enforced separation under slavery, but he had never seen the equal of this. He kept shivering. The woman's eyes went to Hollander. She seemed to recognize her husband's killer. From beside the warrior's body, she grabbed up his fallen bow and arrow. She fitted the notch of the arrow against the string and drew the bow with a strength Gideon could not have believed those slashed and bleeding arms still possessed. Hollander defensively aimed his pistol at her. The hammer fell on a spent cartridge. Gideon squeezed the carbine trigger at close range. The impact drove her backward. The arrow wobbled harmlessly past Hollander, and the bow fell from her hand. Through the smoke, she stared at Gideon with burning black eyes that seared his soul. She sank slowly to earth. She stared at Gideon through glazed eyes after the last flicker of life had gone. He lowered the smoking carbine, tears scalding his eyes.
A woman!
God help him, the first person he had ever knowingly killed had been a woman. The hand rested on his shoulder. He didn't turn to look, but he knew it was Hollander's.
Thank you, Gideon. She'd have killed me.
For one wildly resentful moment, Gideon wished she had.
A woman? How come it had to be a woman?
Not an ordinary woman. An Indian woman. And not like ours. Or yours.
Yours. Gideon stared at the dark face and for a moment saw Hannah York. She, too, was dead to him. At that moment, he hated Hollander as he had hated few men in his life. Several troopers gathered around him. Through the blurring of tears, he made out the towering form of Big Dempsey.
Jimbo, you'd better take your friend aside and talk to him.
Rest of you, we have work to do. We're going to destroy this camp.
Jimbo did no talking. He didn't have to. He simply had to be there. Gideon brought himself to look again at the woman's face. The chill still gripped him, and the feeling of sickness. The women and children were herded into one group. Maloney had counted the Indian dead, he reported to Hollander.
6 grown men and 1 big Mexican boy is all I can find. I don't think any got away. Maybe all that raiding party hadn't got back yet. I find 3 women shot dead, another one fixing to die. 1 youngin' dead, too. Run over by a horse, I expect.
It worries me, there not being more men. Is there a possibility we hit the wrong camp?
Maloney shook his head.
Tracks led straight here.
This is the right camp. Look yonder, that little girl. See what she's got in her hand?
A small girl, possibly 4 years old, grimly clutched a doll. It was a faded cotton doll with a yellow face, with eyes, nose, and mouth of black thread. Gideon remembered that he had seen it in the hands of the little girl, Susie.
One of them dead Indians was this youngin's daddy.
Maloney sat on his horse and studied the captives. They totaled 12 women, mostly young, and 5 children.
What are you gonna do with them, Frank? If we burn up everything, they'll starve to death.
Would you have me shoot them?
It'd be a mercy, I expect. But the army don't pay me enough to shoot women and youngins, even Comanche.
Hollander counted them for the 3rd or 4th time, frowning.
We'll have to take them with us.
Maloney glanced southward, dubious.
It's a long ways to Concho.
These are hardy people. Seems to me that having them as prisoners at the post might give us leverage to help force their kinsmen onto the reservation.
Indians can always get themselves more women and kids. They're birthing new ones all the time. Look at them women. Half of them are in the family way. See the one with the beads? I'll bet you are pretty that she drops hers before we even get to Concho.
Gideon's eyes were drawn to another young woman, obviously pregnant, but not so far along as the one under discussion. Big brown eyes were the outstanding feature in a dark, roundish face. Because of those eyes and their resemblance to Hannah's, he felt a particular concern for her.
Pat, how good are you at sign language?
Maloney shook his head.
I never let myself get close enough to learn.
Try it anyway. See if you can make them understand they're going with us. Make them understand that they're to take along blankets and clothes and food enough for the trip.
Maloney beckoned a couple of fearful women into a teepee and handed them blankets.
You take, we go much far.
It took a while for the women to get the idea and to understand that the soldiers did not intend to abuse or kill them. Finally, they went to their individual lodges under guard, retrieving items they considered necessary. Hollander dispatched Gideon and Jimbo and 3 others to gather the scattered horse herd. Gideon was relieved for even a brief escape from the bloody camp. Big Dempsey was among the detail. As they rounded up the horses and started back with them, he pulled close to Gideon.
Bet you feel proud of yourself, Gid. How's it set with you to kill a woman?
Heat rose in Gideon's face, but he said nothing.
She'd kill that damn lieutenant if you'd stayed out of it.
They'd send us another one to take his place. Maybe worse.
With him gone, we wouldn't have to go back to Concho. We could take our horses and ride off.
Where to? East is Fort Griffin and Richardson. North and west ain't nothing but Comanches.
We go join up with the Indians.
You're crazy.
At least I ain't got no dead woman on my conscience.
Gideon hunched in the saddle.